pretty slow about approving new and safer pesticides and chemicals, and it's very, very slow about reviewing the re-registered pesticides, those that came into use before modern health and safety data was in use. Can you put this process on fast forward?
Absolutely. There are some opportunities available to us within the process, one, to make sure that safer alternatives do become are approved more quickly. Secondly, I think it's important to note that by the 1997 deadline set by Congress in the re-registration program, while not all 400 will be re-registered, we will have dealt with 80% of those pesticides that are used in the agricultural industry that are used on food products. We recognize that we need to do a better job. We are committed to doing a better job.
New biotechnology procedures in vegetables can reduce fertilizer and pesticide use by 20%, yet consumers are very skeptical about genetic engineering. Who's right?
Well, first of all, I always, when asked a question about biotechnology, I feel like I should issue a disclaimer. I have a sister who's a PhD in this field, and she obviously wants to continue to work. I think that you're right. The consumers do have questions about biotechnology. I think that there are an awful lot of exciting things happening, both in terms of agricultural use, also in terms of cleanups. There's been some very exciting breakthroughs in terms of new technologies, bioremediation that can be used in cleanups. I think we, as the EPA and as the government, have a responsibility to explore these options, to work with those industries, and where there is a solution that's cost-effective, safe, that it's protective of our health and of our natural resources, to move forward to use that solution.
Many scientists say that the real concern about food lies in microbial problems. And so on a scale of 1 to 10, where do pesticide residues compare to that sort of problem, and where do pesticide residues fit on the Richter scale?
Well, first of all, and as we've said over the last week, as the Academy and others have come out with their reports, the food supply is safe. We have in this country one of the safest and most abundant and cheaply available food supply, and obviously we want to see that continue. But what we also recognize as government is that we have a responsibility to use every opportunity we can to do a better job. And so in calling for the reduction in the use of pesticides, we believe that that is part of doing a better job and that it will continue to allow us to have one of the safest and most abundant food supplies in the world.
Aren't there data showing that farmers are using fewer pesticides over the past 30 years? In fact, there is a reference on page 15 of the new National Academy of Sciences report. Here's somebody who's really read this report. This speaks directly to such statistics. What is behind the administration's announced commitment last Friday to further reduction? Will you allow the market to continue this trend that of the past 30 years?
Well, we do recognize and we really want to applaud the work of the individual farmers across this country who are looking at alternatives to pesticide use. We think there's some very exciting work going on out there, that there's a lot to be learned from their efforts. But we do believe that we can do better in terms of reducing the overall use of pesticides, and that the benefits to be derived to all the people of this country, to our natural resources, are such that that is the appropriate course of action.
Today, a U.S. District Court judge ruled that NAFTA, the North American Free Trade Agreement, requires an environmental impact statement. Will this kill NAFTA, or will the administration appeal that ruling?
The administration is absolutely committed to NAFTA and to moving it through the Congress. The ruling, I believe, that came out of the federal court today, I have not seen the specific ruling. It raises the issue of an environmental impact statement. Obviously, we will assess the ruling and decide how to proceed.
President Clinton promised the U.S. Mayor's Conference last week he would try to bring them relief from unfunded federal environmental mandates. What current regulations do you intend to change?
Well, I also went up and spent the afternoon at the Conference of Mayors. If you look at the people who have responsibilities across this country in terms of providing the public with environmental protection, obviously our cities play a very significant role, and we are interested in forging a real partnership both with cities and state government as we seek to do the job that the public expects of us. In terms of unfunded mandates, this administration has already called for a clean water revolving fund. That would be money available to municipalities so that they can come into compliance with the wastewater standards. We've also called for the first time for a drinking water revolving fund. Again, money to go out to those small communities to make sure that their drinking water systems are in compliance with the federal standards. So we recognize the tremendous responsibility that has been placed on our cities and our states, and we want to work together in a partnership.
Well, I'm going to approach this issue from a different perspective. On June 14th, the Wall Street Journal reported that two counties in California have terminated involvement in environmental prosecutions because of state budget cuts. Given the current state of the economy, is it realistic to continue to advocate increased state involvement in environmental enforcement?
Well, again, I believe that the only way we are going to be able to do the job is by working together. You know, I come out of state government. I spent the last 2 years running one of the largest state environmental agencies in the country, as you pointed out. And when I look at what I could have done at the state level, what responsibilities I could assume, what the federal government could do, and what the local government can do, I really believe there are opportunities here for assigning responsibilities and for getting on with doing the job. Enforcement of our environmental laws is extremely important. It is one of the tools that the public, that the Congress have given us at the Environmental Protection Agency to make sure that the laws that are passed are in fact complied with, and we take it very seriously, and obviously we would like to work with all of the states to make sure that they have the capacity to do their piece of the enforcement puzzle. But it's absolutely important to us to, again, have those partnerships with state and local government. If we're going to get this job done, it will be through partnerships. I'll give you one example in California, since you raised California. The California South Coast Air Board, which takes care of sort of the south of Los Angeles and over on the coast, dealing only with air issues. That institution employs 900 people full-time working on air issues. The EPA at the headquarters here in Washington employs less than 900 people. So we have got to work together. They obviously have the capacity, the resources, the know-how to do the job. We have to honor that. We have to let them do the job, and we'll put our energies in other places.
Now, you talked about all the kids in Zachary's class knowing about recycling. Senator Max Baucus knows about it, too. He's chairman of the Environment and Public Works Committee of the U.S. Senate, and he has indicated an interest in promoting recycling legislation. Is the Clinton administration involved in this effort with Senator Baucus? Does the administration take a position on either general recovery rates by industry or mandated minimum recycled content levels?
We work with Chairman Baucus, Chairman of the Environment and Public Works Committee, on all of the issues of importance, obviously, to this administration in terms of the environment. He is the member of the Senate who has primary jurisdiction. In terms of the two specific issues, I think that we all recognize that the concept of recycling has caught on, that people love the idea of separating their bottles, putting their newspapers out, but that what we have to do is begin the process of closing that loop. We're collecting it. Now we have to turn it into products that go back out into the marketplace and that people use. One of the things that this administration has already committed to do is to put in place a executive order that will require federal agencies, you know, the federal government buys more of everything than anyone else, that we will use our purchasing power as the federal government to drive those markets, to buy things that have recycled content. So all that good collection work that's been going on at the local level, those cities who have invested in curbside recycling programs, they'll actually start to see the return on that. And we think that's absolutely essential to help to close the loop on the recycling process.
Another piece of legislation Senator Baucus has been working on is the Clean Water Act. Mm-hmm. What are the things that you want to get out of a Clean Water Act, and specifically on farmers? Will farmers be required to have mandatory changes in their farm production, or do you expect there to be voluntary work?
The Clean Water Act, which some of you may be familiar with, is being considered, and the process, the reauthorization process, has now started in the Senate with the introduction of the Baucus-Chafee bill. One of the things that I think is important to remember about the Clean Water Act is that it is generally considered to have been one of the most flexible of the environmental laws, and to be one of the most successful in terms of achieving its goals. When the Clean Water Act came into being, now 20 years ago, we had rivers on fire in this country because of the garbage that was being disposed of. We've come a long way. We still have a lot to do. Obviously, the two issues that we would like to see addressed in a reauthorization are, one, ecosystems. Let's make sure that we're making our decisions on the basis of the natural system. Let's look at that system. Let's look at what the historical impacts have been. Let's look at how it used to function, and let's honor that system and protect the system, the natural system. The non-point source issue obviously is a significant problem. If you look at what is affecting our rivers, lakes, and streams, it is the runoff, what happens when it rains, whether on agricultural lands or in a city like Washington. And we are looking at ways to induce everybody to do the right thing, to reduce the amount of pollutants that continue to enter our water bodies in this country through urban and agricultural runoff.
Will homeowners in the suburbs who put chemicals on their lawns be affected by the Clean Water Act?
Well, the whole issue of lawn chemicals is obviously one that has been of great significance and importance to a number of communities across the country. What you put on your lawn can, in certain weather conditions, end up in your nearby lake or river. And so we, again, want to make sure that when we look at the whole question of what is affecting and what is continuing to pollute the rivers and the lakes and the streams of this country, that we look broadly and we make sure that we do everything we can to solve the problem, whether it be through stormwater systems or combined sewer overflow, but that we really understand that we still need to do better in terms of the water quality of our water bodies.
Somebody has just handed me a nasty note saying homeowners in cities use chemicals too. I just meant the suburbanites have larger lawns. Anyway, also in this clean water business, there might be a wetlands component. How do you see the wetlands issue being solved? And just another point, your former boss, Vice President Al Gore, is interested in streamlining government. How about streamlining the four agencies that are required to make a wetlands determination, Corps of Engineers, EPA, Department of Agriculture, and Fish and Wildlife Service?
Depending on where you are and what you're doing. But that's exactly right. In terms of the wetlands issue, I believe, and this is in part based on my experience in Florida, where we obviously have a lot of wetlands. We also had a fairly rigorous statute in terms of protecting those wetlands, that there are problems in the process, but you can fix those problems. And we made some efforts in Florida to streamline the permitting process, to get a quicker answer, to make sure that if the answer was no, the parties knew. If the answer was yes, the parties knew. There are things we can do in terms of mitigation. You can use mitigation banking to allow for wetland loss to be mitigated. What we need to do at the federal government and what we are doing is looking across, as you point out, the four agencies that have a responsibility, seeing what we can do to streamline the process, be responsive, and protect those valuable wetlands.
This questioner wonders if maybe we shouldn't see what's already happening under the existing Clean Water Act, saying since the 1987 Clean Water Act amendments are still a long way from being implemented, wouldn't it be advisable to see where we are when these are implemented before enacting a lot of new laws?
Well, we are obviously continuing to do our work under the previous amendments. However, I think there is a recognition that reauthorizing the program now makes sense, that as our knowledge has grown, and this happens in all of the laws that we deal with, it's constantly changing our understanding of our natural systems, our understanding of the tools available to protect those natural systems is constantly changing. And so to have Congress come back and look at the Clean Water Act with the knowledge knowledge we now have with our understanding of what's important in terms of the future is absolutely appropriate.
Source reduction is the top priority of the EPA's solid waste management hierarchy, but if you look at media coverage of solid waste issues, you'd think recycling is the top priority. What is the EPA doing to push source reduction as a way to minimize waste?
Is this a question goes to household?
Oh, I think
it says solid waste. Okay.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, when I went to Florida for my job 2.5 years ago, if someone had asked me what I thought I would spend my time on or the bulk of my time on, garbage would not have been at the top of the list. The reality is, though, that garbage is what you spend a lot of your time on when you deal at the state level and at the local level and, quite frankly, at the federal level. Obviously, solid waste is a very important issue. It's that's not meant as it sounded, but solid waste is an issue that every single person in the country cares about. And we clearly need to do a better job of first reducing the amount of waste we generate, and quite frankly, that whether it's solid waste or hazardous waste or whatever. Second, once we have done everything we can to reduce, then look to reuse and recycling opportunities. And when we have used up all of those opportunities, then look to appropriate disposal and safe disposal.
You didn't touch on incineration as a means of dealing with our hazardous and solid waste disposal crises. What are your thoughts on the pros and cons of this technology?
Well, I believe that there are a number of technologies available for dealing, again, once you've gone through source reduction, reuse, recycling, and now you're into appropriate disposal. And as you look across the country, we need to take into account the unique situations of a particular region or a particular area and decide on what the appropriate disposal technology is. And in some situations, that will be incineration.
Now let's talk about the incinerator in East Liverpool, Ohio. It's interesting. I know people in the audience. There are a lot of environmentalists in the audience, and there are a lot of industry people in the audience. So here on one side of the issue, this question is, will EPA stand by despite tests showing excessive levels of lead and dioxin?
The WTI issue is obviously an issue that we inherited from the past administration. The permit was signed in the past administration. I have been recused by the Government Ethics Office from participation in the WTI matter. It is the only matter that I have been recused on thus far, and so I do not participate in the discussions within the agency, nor do I stay informed as to what is happening with the WTI facility. That would not be appropriate. It is not within the ethics of the guidance.
Well, we'll forget about the other questions on this then. EPA's settlement recently with Louisiana Pacific over permit violations calls for the company to install $70 million in regenerative thermal oxidation technology at some of its plants to curb pollution. Doesn't that amount to asking Louisiana Pacific to build the very kinds of polluting waste incinerators for which you recently announced a construction ban? Why didn't you shut the plants down?
The question goes to an enforcement action against Louisiana Pacific. The fine is $11.4 million. In addition to the fine that will be paid to the U.S. Treasury, there will also be $70 million in technology. The agency worked with Louisiana Pacific to understand what the problem was, what the solutions were. It was not a situation where the technology existed in the form of a pollution prevention. We thought it was expeditious and important to move expeditiously to get control technology in place that will have the effect of dramatically reducing the emissions from those facilities. And that is a common question that we are faced with when we are dealing with an enforcement action that involves corrective actions. And we do want to work with parties to get them into compliance, to get the pollution minimized, to get it reduced. Wherever a pollution prevention opportunity presents itself, that is, of course, the preferred route. In some instances, the technology is not there, and then we look to other technologies.
Why did the administration push the BTU tax so hard when EPA statistics showed it would have such a minuscule effect on pollution, reducing criteria pollutants by less than 1%?
Well, the BTU tax is part of an overall commitment and a budget package that was aimed at reducing the deficit. It was viewed as a means of collecting revenues that could go towards deficit reduction and have some environmental benefits.
When do you expect the first four Delaney chemical revocations will be released from OMB, and does the agency's recent policy on reducing the use of pesticides affect the remaining Delaney candidates?
I think the issue you're asking about has to do with the lawsuit regarding the Delaney clause. One of the great things about having jobs like this is you're sued every day. But there is a lawsuit that was started in the last administration. There have been some rulings. Pursuant to those rulings, we have moved to deny certain, emergency uses of some pesticides, and we are in that process right now. There are some specific pesticides that are affected by the lawsuit, and then obviously throughout the summer we'll be looking at the other impacts from the lawsuit. I think this again raises the fact that we in the administration are committed to working with Congress to give us a pesticide law that really takes into account how we can farm today, how we live our lives today, how we grow our food and get it to market.
The Superfund program is raising only a fraction of the money it needs to clean up the nation's toxic waste sites. Where do you plan to get the money?
I don't know that I would agree that the Superfund program is raising only a fraction. There are two issues in the Superfund program, and they seem to be crossed over there. Let me see if I can separate them out quickly. The first issue is the trust fund. It is a fee on feedstock chemicals that is put into a trust fund. I think it generates roughly $2 billion a year. That money is then appropriated, or some portion of that is appropriated to the agency for its Superfund activities and to other agencies that participate in Superfund cleanups. The other issue that has come up is the agency's efforts to collect cleanup dollars already expended from the trust fund. We have a policy now of seeking payment or cleanup by responsible parties where they are available. That is a change in policy. I think that policy was changed approximately 5 years ago, and the policy was changed, we've had to go back and make sure that where there is a responsible party, they've in fact reimbursed the trust fund. Superfund program is one of the largest and most important programs that we run at the Environmental Protection Agency. It is a program that has done an awful lot of good in terms of protecting the citizens of this country, in terms of protecting our natural resources. There are also some questions about the program. We have undertaken a very significant project within the agency to use all administrative tools available to us to make sure that we are protecting the public health, we are protecting our natural resources, and we are getting these sites cleaned up and put back into productive use. And we have a very significant time frame within which we will be implementing these changes, and they are real changes, and they will have real consequences in terms of how the program is managed and the effectiveness of the program. In addition, we'll be working with Congress in the legislative reauthorization that they will be undertaking to move forward whatever changes are more appropriate to the legislative arena as compared to the administrative arena.
Ailing Persian Gulf veterans are complaining of multiple chemical sensitivity. What, if any, research is EPA doing on this issue?
I heard that issue this morning at 5:30 a.m. when the radio came on, and I am not aware of what we are doing, and obviously that's something we will want to get back to you on.
Do you get up at 5:30 every day?
Yes. You have to.
The Center for Resource Economics recently put out a report critical of EPA because it has such a great mission and such limited resources. Given your very ambitious list of initiatives, what do you plan to do with EPA's budget and number of personnel?
Well, the EPA budget is $6.4 billion and slightly more than 17,000 people. Is obviously a large agency. We have a long list of responsibilities. The challenge for us, and it's a challenge that we accept and that I think we are making tremendous progress on, is to manage it wisely, to look for efficiencies wherever they can occur, and to be responsive to the public that we serve.
What role do you see for EPA in the commercialization of environmental technologies developed at government facilities, such as remediation technologies at weapons plants?
We're very excited about the opportunities that exist in environmental technologies across this country. The U.S. really is on the cutting edge of developing new environmental technologies. President Clinton has included in the FY94 budget for EPA approximately $40 million that would go towards environmental technologies. We will be able to use that in conjunction with the Department of Energy, the Department of Defense, to get those technologies up and running, to get them available to people out in the field and in the international market. There's a huge demand for this technology internationally, and we really think it will be quite successful in terms of a return for the businesses in this country who have made the investment.
I'm going to return to this pesticide issue since it was the big issue of the day. As you are trying to decrease pesticide use on farms in the United States, what are you doing to prevent the importation of foods that are grown elsewhere with the use of pesticides?
There are programs in place right now that deal with foods entering the country. We have recently made sure that certain pesticides will not be on foods entering the United States, and we will continue our activities in that field.
Why are you monitoring pesticides on the farms instead of in the food stores where they're closer to the people?
Well, in fact, the work that is done by FDA and the Department of Agriculture does look at the food product once it has left the farm and is on its way to the consumer. There are analyses taken crop by crop looking at what the residues are on those crops before they get to the consumer, and that is an ongoing program right now.
Before I ask the last question, I want to give you a certificate of appreciation and a National Press Club mug that you can use at 5:30 in the morning to wake yourself up. And I'd like to say again that audio and videotapes of today's luncheon are available through the National Press Club Library or by calling 1-800-952-TAPE. All proceeds of sales of the tape benefit the National Press Club Library. Now the last question is, are you going to change Zachary's intake of fresh fruit and vegetables as a result of the NAS study?
Absolutely not. He can continue to eat however many bananas he wants in one sitting. No, the food supply is safe. We encourage parents to continue to feed their children fresh foods, fresh fruits, fresh vegetables. Give them a varied diet. It's absolutely important to their future. Thank you.
Thank you very much.